Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
The Marquette University Law School poll says Joe Biden has a narrow margin of error lead over President Trump in Wisconsin. It also says Governor Evers' job approval has slipped slightly, and two-thirds of respondents say they would get a COVID-19 vaccine shot. The first black Dane County legislator, Democrat Representative Sheila Stubbs, agrees to co-chair Speaker Robin Voss's task force on racial disparities. And Mike Pence and Kamala Harris make Labor Day campaign pitches in the state. Rewind, your week in review for September 11th.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., the biggest news of the week is still a very fluid situation here. So let's just summarize it. And I'll summarize it, then you bring us up to date on what could happen today and some updates from today. Okay. Yesterday afternoon, the state Supreme Court told the Wisconsin Election Commission to get information from the, isn't it more than 1,800 local clerks? Do I have the number approximately right? Okay, to get information on how many absentee ballots have been sent out, who they've been sent out to, when they were sent out. Now, this involves a challenge by the Green Party candidate who wants to get on the November 3 presidential ballot. Now, before I turn it over to you, JR, for some updates today, because you've been watching it closely, and I know you're checking your for updates every 2 minutes, we're also awaiting a ruling from a Brown County judge on a challenge by Kanye West to get on the presidential ballot. Okay, go ahead, JR, because you're reporting a figure of 328,000, but I'm just teasing. What does that mean?
Well, one, we have a lot of municipalities who have already printed ballots. And so if the Supreme Court says you have to change that ballot to add a candidate, those have to be reprinted at a significant cost to local governments. Let's kind of take a 30,000-foot view for a second. There are several deadlines we're facing a couple weeks here in Wisconsin. One, September 16th, county clerks must deliver to municipal clerks by that date the ballots. September 17th, municipal clerks must mail those ballots out to those who have a valid absentee ballot request on file. September 19th, under federal law, overseas and military voters must be mailed their absentee ballots. So we are in a time crunch. During the Green Party lawsuit, the Green Party submitted an affidavit from a clerk in Jefferson County who said, basically, as long as she knew by noon today what was going on the ballot, she'd have no problems making the deadlines. Well, it's past noon today.
Right.
We don't have a ruling. So, one, what's the Supreme Court going to do? There are thousands of ballots already printed. We are unsure how many may have already been mailed. It's not quite clear because the way the commission tracks these ballots, they go under a ballot sent header. But we don't know what that means. It's that the labels are prepped. They're actually in the mail. So if any are in the mail, there's a problem, obviously. If you receive a ballot next week and they order changes to the ballot, what happens if you use the old ballot to cast your vote this fall? See the problem there?
Yeah.
So there's a real issue. The Supreme Court ordered local clerks yesterday to cease sending ballots. Again, we don't know how many may have gone out already. So that's drama number one. Drama number two is Kanye West is suing in Brown County, also trying to get a ballot. Now, different situation here. We have a circuit court lawsuit versus a case being for the Supreme Court. The circuit court lawsuit, you could go to the appeals court and then the Supreme Court before you get a final decision. So we are in a time crunch once again. In that case, the judge that overseen the case, he expressed two things. One, to him, 5 o'clock means 5 o'clock. And why that's important is that Kanye West has argued repeatedly and in many creative ways that the statute saying that papers must be turned in not later than 5 p.m. actually means a clock when the clock strikes 5:01. Now, what Judge Joukowsky said during that hearing on Wednesday was that's common sense about what 5 o'clock means, that basically 5 is 5. But what the law says may be different. He will look at that. Number two, he was very concerned because the doors of the building Housing Elections Commission office were locked the day these papers were due. He wasn't quite clear why that was going on and really was concerned about this. That was an impediment to the West campaign filing the papers. Remember, the commission is housed in a privately owned building. The owner of that building implemented this policy of locking the doors requiring keypad access because of the COVID-19 pandemic. In the multiple filings I've read last week in this case, The West campaign argues that was unfair. That delayed them. They argued that they walked in the doors at 5 o'clock in 14 seconds, and that's when the papers were filed. The commission, through Department of Justice, says, no. We had somebody waiting at the door at 4:55 p.m. to let you in to facilitate the filing. You weren't there until the building's after 5, but you didn't file your papers until well after 5:01, your erroneous interpretation of state statute, because he has to let you in at 5 o'clock in 14 seconds, walked you down a hallway, got you in the elevator. The election special looked at his watch, it says almost 5:01. You walked in the office at 5:01. Your papers still weren't transferred because they weren't ready. They had to be numbered properly, be turned over. That took several minutes. Ergo, you were late no matter how you interpret state law. Right. Now, I make no predictions what judges are going to do, but that's why I'm waiting breathlessly for the Supreme Court to act in the Green Party lawsuit and the Brown County judge and the Kanye West one, because again, this is part of the time crunch. We have 1 million ballot requests right now for absentee ballots. If this takes much longer, it crunches the front end of a process that's going to could be problematic on the back end with the rush of those ballots back into clerks.
Okay, and because of that noon deadline cited by that local clerk, we delayed the taping of Rewind, try to catch any ruling by the Supreme Court or the Brown County judge. Has it yet come? Could be, as they over the what's the term overused in our business, breaking news. But also, JR, there's one scenario I want to ask you about. It's possible that any absentee ballots that have gone out without the names of the Libertarian and Kanye West, they could be sent, those voters could be sent a second ballot, correct? That's just one possible scenario?
That's the problem that people could face if, and again, we don't know how many, if any, ballots have actually been mailed. We know they've been prepped to be mailed, like they got a label produced. They may be in an envelope somewhere. We don't know they've actually gone out. Right. And if they have gone out, then yes, that is definitely possibly a problem. Then how do you resolve that issue? The other issue is, did the West and Green Party campaigns wait too long to file their suits? That's one of the key arguments from the Department of Justice, is that the decision from the Elections Commission on both cases was August 20th. Kanye West didn't file his lawsuit until August 28th. The deadline to have your ballots basically laid out and approved was September 1st. So he waited until days for that ballot was basically had to be taken care of, and waited until September 2nd to file a request for an order to change the ballots. The Green Party didn't file this lawsuit until 2 full weeks after the Election Commission hearing. The question is that too late? Is it unreasonable to file those when you have all these things moving toward a mailing of the ballots? Are they unreasonable?
Right. So it's still a very fluid situation, and you're going to keep checking your emails for updates, JR. So if we get a ruling, we'll interrupt the show, but we got to move on. Okay, let's talk about some of the elements of the Charles Franklin MMU poll. JR, let's just land on four of them just quickly. The horse race between President Trump and Biden in September, Mr. Biden 47, Mr. Trump 43. Libertarian Jo Jorgensen, first time she was the Marquette poll asked about her, 4% don't know, refuse, 6%. No big change from August. Nothing significant, JR, right?
No, and what's, I think, kind of more interesting to me is beyond the horse race numbers, if you look at the question of do voters approve of the way Donald Trump has handled the protests, they didn't really move very much. It was 30%, I think it was, in June, 32 in August. I think we're at 34, 36 this month. Forgive me for getting that number. But Trump has gone all in on the law and order issue. He went to Kenosha during the poll being in the field. And the only thing that Franklin saw was that the response from him almost evenly split between before the visit and after the visit. And what he saw was that Republicans moved and rallied around the president when it comes to how he handles the protests. But other people really didn't. And so the question becomes, what changes the dynamic of this race? I asked this all week long, and their answer was, we don't know. What more dramatic could happen? I mean, think about this. The Bob Woodward book that's come out now, where the president downplayed COVID-19 publicly while he admitted in private that he knew how dangerous it was. I asked him, is that a game changer? No, it's white noise, they told me, because there's just such a constant churn of controversy around this administration. There, people I talk to wonder, how do you break through that noise? Now, it doesn't mean that Biden's got wrapped up by any means necessary. It means that it's going to be a slow slog from now until November, and it's unclear what will be a dramatic change. But there are things to watch, like, are there more protests? Are there more violent protests? Is there a vaccine? Is there something that happens in the debates? I mean, there are possibilities for change. But what's remarkable to me is, if you look at the Marquette poll since May, It's been plus four Biden, plus six Biden, plus five Biden, plus four Biden. Think of all that's happened since May in this country and this state. We haven't seen dramatic change. What could change the race at this point? I really don't know.
Okay, but let's turn now to another part of the Charles Franklin poll. The governor's approval rating slipped slightly, 6 percentage points from August. 51% now approve, 43% disapprove. As I say, that's a switch of 6 percentage points. Significant or any reflection of the governor in the wake of the Kenosha unrest?
When you look at the handling of COVID-19, those numbers didn't change dramatically. So when I talk to people, like, their assumption is it's all about Kenosha. I mean, obviously there was criticism from Republicans about the number of troops that he sent, although the governor says, hey, I answered every request locals gave me, so you know, I did what I was supposed to do there. There was criticism for like not coming until 4 days later. There was also criticism for not accepting federal help right away because the White House made an offer and the governor turned it down. In a luncheon this week, he said he had no regrets about his interactions with the White House. Talking to some folks, they thought that was a little tone deaf when you have $50 million in damage right now and 100 businesses that have been hurt in some way. So we're seeing that change with Kenosha maybe. One thing to note, don't forget in 2015, Scott Walker turned down a casino in Kenosha. Was running for president. Remember this?
Yes.
He lost Kenosha County in 2018. Not saying it's because of that. There's a theory that people in Kenosha remembered what happened. I talked to people the last couple weeks. They think that people in Kenosha will remember how the governor handled Kenosha. And that Kenosha County, which is a key county in statewide elections, especially in off years, that might hurt him in 2 years, how he handled things.
Okay, another one. 3 out of 4 from the MMU poll I went on. Do you approve of the protests against police after the Kenosha shootings? And that's why I included it. 48% disapprove, 47% approve. In August, it was 51% approve. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, JR. How important?
Change was from the June poll to the August poll. That when you saw a real movement. That's when you had, you know, even amid the violence you saw in Minneapolis, you also saw the president with the clearing of that park in Washington, D.C. for the photo op, how he was handling things. So there was a rallying effect toward the protest, toward Black Lives Matter in that June poll. Then you have the June poll, you have Madison in June with the state senator being beat up, the statues coming down, buildings being damaged. That seems to be a minute in time that impacted those numbers, the August poll. But we've seen no real change from August to September. So does that mean we're locked in pretty much? I mean, think about what we saw in Kenosha. It doesn't change your mind in Wisconsin. What's going to? That's the big question. What else could happen to change people's minds about what are the protests and Black Lives Matter?
Yeah. And the first snippet from the MMU poll, excuse me. Would you get the COVID vaccine? 64% said they probably or definitely would. One-third not. I just find this number fascinating, JR. Any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, there's a real concern about that. And also, I mean, there are lots of COVID that are interesting. At one point last month, parents were more comfortable with kids going back to school. Now they're not. It's flipped. So it's stuff like that. I mean, it's still a major concern for people in the state and this country about COVID-19. And there's still some anxiety there about various things.
Okay, now, new subject. In response to the unrest in Kenosha, the tragic shootings, Speaker Voss is going to plans a task force. The co-chair of that will be Assembly Majority Leader Jim Steinke, and he announced this week that his co-chair will be Madison Rep. Sheila Stubbs, first Black woman elected from Dane County. And let's hear how Steinke and Stubbs what they said at the press conference in the Capitol. Excuse me.
We're hoping to have our first task force meeting late September, early October, with a fairly aggressive schedule of meeting every 2 to 3 weeks after that to make sure that we can get through the bulk of information that we need to get through leading into the next legislative session, where we'll hopefully have that bipartisan package of bills ready to go.
Governor Evers did as much as he could to help us with a special session. That didn't happen. This is the next step. This is a step I'm willing to come to the table and work on behalf of my constituents, on behalf of Wisconsinites. Black people have not received the correct justice. And what we have to do is it is an urgency. So we have to move as quickly as we can. We did not get the special session that we wanted. So here's the next viable step.
I want to stay on this, JR. Here's something I find interesting. I went back to Representative Stubbs' comments when she joined the Black Caucus, which criticized Republicans for not acting on the governor's special session call. I went back to Representative Stubbs' comments, and then we just heard what she said, that, look, this is not this task force is not it's a step forward. It's not a solution. So I just kind of find it interesting. She was so critical with the Black Caucus press conference. Now she has joined it. Point one. Point two, JR, I looked up Speaker Voss's press releases on what this task force is going to focus on. Let me read the four subjects: racial disparities, educational opportunities, public safety, police policies and standards. Now, that's such four complex, broad subjects for a task force that hasn't even been named yet. And by the way, this, Steinicke said you can apply to be on this task force by replying by email. And he wants these four issues addressed by this January. How can that be done?
Well, Steinicke said they're going to meet the first time, I think, late September, early October. They go every 2 to 3 weeks after that. Hoping to produce a bipartisan package of bills. Don't forget, we have a package from the governor. We have a package from State Senator Van Wangard, a Republican from Racine. We have other proposals out there. So, and Sheila Stubbs said, we know the issues. We know the problems. She also offered that they know some of the solutions. It's a question of getting people on board to do something together. And what you're noticing from this task force is Robin Voss has kind of rolled this out slowly. So first it was, he's going to do a task force. Then it was, Steinicke's going to lead it. Now we have the new other co-chair. Then he'll announce the members. So this is kind of showing you that they're engaged on the issue and paying attention to it without necessarily coming to vote on something. Because don't forget, with the special session on guns last fall, they came in and gaveled in and out in 30 seconds. They took heat for that, Republicans did. It's a little different situation where, again, they're keeping it open. They're not doing anything on the floor anytime soon. They're trying to show they're engaged on the issue ahead of the November election.
Okay, but I'm gonna close the loop on this subject by saying something that you repeating something that you just said. There is almost no chance that we're going to have action this calendar year, right? When Senator Van Wangard says, I'm going to build a compromise for spring, when Majority Leader Steinicke says, I hope to get some recommendations by early next year, no chance of any actions on police reforms this calendar year, correct?
I can't imagine them voting before November. Steinicke said they're keeping the special session open just in case there is some grand bargain. But people I talked to have a hard time seeing them come in before the end of this year and doing something. It's more likely to be next session.
Okay, next subject. The governor was the host of the Milwaukee Press Club this week, and he was asked an interesting question that we're going to hear from Patrick Marley of the Journal Sentinel. At one point, your administration expressed interest in making public the names of businesses, schools, and workplaces that had COVID positives. Let's turn it over to Patrick Marley, his question and the governor's answer, please.
Your administration at one point was looking at releasing the names of businesses or other places that had outbreaks of COVID in some kind of number so that the public would be aware of there were places they might want to avoid. You ultimately, or at least so far, have decided not to do that. Why didn't you decide to release that information?
Well, we believe that it's information that is not public, and that it is it's information that we need to keep in a way that not only protects the businesses, but more importantly, it helps us monitor and helps us answer the questions about outbreaks and how we deal with outbreaks and do it in a way that isn't a problem for us. So we continue to do this in case there's a second question around schools, because you know it is too easy to suddenly be releasing that information and we'd be able to identify students just like we could identify, possibly identify workers. So there's some privacy things going on there. It has nothing to do with wanting to be open. And I think there's less of an issue around schools because most schools that are having issues are releasing that information as soon as they have it.
JR, I find this interesting because there's a public transparency issue here. Wouldn't you like to know if your local store XYZ had a number of positives, and that was the issue in July, but they've decided, for the reasons that the governor just said, that it's not a public record. What are your thoughts on this debate and how we're coming back to it a few months later?
Well, let's talk. The pushback from business has been like, how do you handle this? What if you had one positive a week versus one a month? Are you going to have a cumulative number? Or if you have like an outbreak of five in 1 week, and that's going to be the same as somebody had one each week for 5 weeks? I mean, they had all kinds of issues about how they were going to couch this, and it would be like a red letter basically on the business if they put out this information. So it's just going to be a pushback from business community about that idea of losing that information.
Meanwhile, you have the situation at UW-Madison, which is now online with two dorms quarantined and undergrad social activities limited. And P.S., record number, more than 1,500 of positive cases yesterday. G.R., I just want to ask you about one thing. September 28 is the deadline for the governor to, it ends the statewide mask mandate. So he's got a decision whether to extend that. There's also a lawsuit in Polk County. Is that a significant deadline, September 28, on whether he extends the statewide mask edict?
Well, at least he's not tipping his hand so far what he's going to do. But the mandate basically has been fairly popular. People who hate it really, really hate it. But the polls have shown so far people kind of like it.
Okay. Next subject. You and I are football fans. So let's just take a second and point out that Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald joined other legislative leaders from other Big Ten states, saying we'd like to play. The Assembly, the Speaker and Fitzgerald, they joined a letter with legislative leaders from Big Ten states. The letters asked that Big Ten reconsider canceling fall football season because of the pandemic, and says schools will lose hundreds of millions of dollars. This letter was written before, and this is important, the UW Chancellor orders online classes for 2 weeks, quarantines two dorms, and limits the undergrad social events because of rising number of COVID-19 cases. Would you still like to be rooting for University of Indiana, JR?
It's Indiana University, number one, but number two, yes. It's just, you know, part of the debate is what is the purpose of a college athlete being on campus? Is it to play sports or to get a degree? If it's to get a degree, then if you're not in class, how can you be playing football? I mean, that's part of the question, right? If your focus is more on, well, they're there because they're training for professional sports, different debate. Or if you think football should be played because you want to watch it. But it's one of the things we're trying to balance around these chancellors about how do you move forward with these extracurricular activities when you don't have kids in class because they're quarantined. Don't forget, I believe Madison is going to send students home after Thanksgiving, not bring them back until, maybe that's my alma mater, but some schools are sending kids home around Thanksgiving, not bring them back until February, hoping to avoid that winter spike. So there are lots of moving pieces going on right now, but I don't get I'm no expert about what the Big Ten is going to do athletically, but that's kind of part of the debate going on that I've heard so far about whether they should be playing football.
And you're going to forgive me for it's Indiana University?
Yes.
Okay, that's like the Ohio State University. Okay, moving on. Let's just say that, Wisconsin has become not a flyover place for presidential and vice presidential presidential candidates, but Vice President Pence was in western Wisconsin, the La Crosse area, Dairyland Power, and Kamala Harris was in Milwaukee. So before we hear from them, let's just talk about what Mr. Pence did. He was at Dairyland Power. He talked about workers. He pointed out that Kamala Harris voted against the latest trade pact that hurt Wisconsin farmers with Mexico and Canada. And for her part, Vice Presidential nominee Kamala Harris toured the training facility for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. And we're going to see a lot more of these candidates next week, right, JR?
We're going to see Vice President Pence on Monday in Janesville, Donald Trump Jr. Midweek up in Wausau area on Rothschild, and then President Trump back in Wisconsin in Mosinee on Friday night, flying into the Central Wisconsin Airport to do a rally.
Okay, before we go to your stock picks, let's listen to some segments from both the speeches from Mr. Pence, Vice President Pence, and Democratic Vice Presidential nominee Senator Kamala Harris, please.
In our first 3 years, what a difference the decision that Wisconsin made made. There's only three ways you can describe those years. It was jobs, 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 right here in Wisconsin and all across America. You know, I heard that Joe Biden's running mate is in Milwaukee today. But dairy farmers in Wisconsin deserve to know that Senator Kamala Harris is one of only 10 senators to vote against the USMCA. She said it didn't go far enough on climate change. And here at Dairyland Power, you deserve to know. Senator Harris put their radical environmental agenda ahead of Wisconsin dairy and ahead of Wisconsin power. But under President Donald Trump, we will always put Wisconsin farmers, Wisconsin businesses, and Wisconsin families first. I promise you that we're never going to stop fighting for working people all across Wisconsin and all across America until we bring this state and this nation back bigger and better than ever before.
What we know about small businesses and small business leaders is they are not only leaders of business, they are civic leaders. They hire locally. They understand the jewels that exist within their community and the need to then encourage all of the good things that can happen in those communities. During the course of this crisis, up to 90% of minority and women-owned small businesses did not get the benefit of the PPP. In large part because, you know, unlike how Donald Trump has been concerned about the wealthy, the people who are working every day and trying to raise their families don't have the access to those kinds of relationships and have not received the benefit of something like the PPP. We see you. We understand the significance of what you are in terms of the health and well-being of communities. And we see the benefit to the entire country to invest in our small businesses and our small business leaders. And so that is why we are here today.
Okay, JR, the stock picker is back in the House rising.
Brett Ludwig, a bankruptcy court judge in Milwaukee in the federal court, now has been confirmed for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, filling a longtime vacancy there. What's interesting is not only was he confirmed September election year, but confirmed overwhelmingly. More than 90 senators voted for his confirmation. And looking at this, I kind of asked people, you know, what was dynamic here? And especially because a lot of Democrats don't vote for President Trump's judicial appointments. Yeah. Remember, we're different in Wisconsin. We have a nominating commission that's built, created by the two U.S. senators that screens applicants, produces a pool of candidates, and then forwards those to the White House. And they're restricted pretty much from voting, picking from that pool. So, Ludwig is not really viewed as somebody who's really conservative or like a firebrand. He's kind of a moderate guy, well qualified in this long time vacancy. But two, even if Tim Elder wanted to wait until maybe if President Biden was in charge, you wouldn't get a very different pool of candidates than you got this time, because the same commission, maybe different appointees in the commission, producing the candidates. So, you know, quality pick and confirmed overwhelmingly.
And next?
Revenues. So, look, we're basically, it's almost like a wash. We're up about $100 million for general fund tax collections, down about $100 million for transportation fund collections. But here's the thing to remember. We get a better look at things in October. We look at the expenses side. That's a big part of the budget, not just how much we take in. And then two, November's the big one. We're going to get one more look from the Evers administration at the 2021 fiscal year about how much we're supposed to bring in and what we're spending. And then two, we have projection going forward for the 21-23 budget, what's happening with that one. So big numbers coming up in the next couple of months. But for right now, for having a pandemic, well, the economy for a quarter of the fiscal year, we made out okay.
Okay. And falling.
Yeah, falling as we. Oh, recalls. Yeah,
recalls. So,
look, the effort to recall the Madison mayor failed, probably failed by a long, big margin. And people I talked to expect the same thing to happen with the efforts to recall Governor Evers, Lieutenant Governor Barnes, and AG Josh Call. Now, Republicans have kind of gnashed their teeth about this the last couple of weeks because, one, they remember how Walker, when he was targeted for recall, he built a national fundraising network, raised unlimited amounts of money while the recall was going on, and it really strengthened him, and they worried that could happen with Evers. The problem, though, is that, one, the state GOP is not getting involved in these recall efforts. Without the state GOP, it's hard to see them collecting 670,000 signatures in 60 days. It's more than 11,000 signatures a day for a 60-day period. Right. Number two, the Democrats had not just the state party, but the unions, other groups involved collecting signatures. It was a massive effort to get them against Walker. Two, things have changed since 2011 and 2012. Now, the state political parties can take unlimited contributions themselves. and transfer that money in unlimited amounts to candidates. So it's not like before Walker could take these six-figure checks, like, oh my gosh, look what he's getting. Now the party collects the check. They can transfer it over to Governor Evers when it wants to. So it's kind of not as big as an advantage. And oh, by the way, it's all happening ahead of an election. So it's kind of like, you know, one, I don't see Governor Evers fundraising prolifically the next couple of months because there are bigger fish to fry. But also for Republicans, the worry is these things will take attention away from the real prize right now, which is the presidency and state legislature. So as long as these guys are out there gathering signatures, it's less attention on the real race going on. So it's likely going to fail, but it might take some attention away from what really should be the focus for a lot of people.
Okay, we're almost out of time, but check your computer. Any Supreme Court or Brown County rulings we need to worry about, JR?
I just checked and nothing new just yet, but I'll keep checking.
Well, then we know what'll dominate Rewind next week. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm JR Ross.
That's Rewind for September 11.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.